If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark. I'm back with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And before we get to our amazing guest this week, I also want to remind everybody that if you're interested in my Everest pursuits coming up in 2021, leaving March 31st, you can do so at www.markpattisonnfl.com. You can also find all the podcasts. We've got over 175 there now, massive downloads, which I totally appreciate the love. And as always, please go in and give a ratings and review. It's not about me being popular. Of course, it's about all these inspirational people like we're going to talk about with today that help guide the way. And so the more exposure on iTunes, the more exposure you get in terms of viewability and what is out there in this gigantic sea of podcasts. Okay, so on that note, let's jump in. I've got an amazing guest. It's a big catch for me. I've had a couple of actors on. This guy I've been following for a long time. Very, very interesting dude. His name is Tom Arnold. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing well, buddy. How you doing?
Well, I was looking back at your you've got this amazing career and you've got over 50 films, all kinds of TV stuff going on. And I was asking, how in the hell does a guy from Iowa that at one point in time was working in a meat plant become this Hollywood icon, you know, very well known? You've had these amazing projects. You've got a really wide, diverse range of things you've done. I mean, where was it on the vision board when you're growing up, or how did you fall into all this stuff?
The vision board. Well, you know, I did grow up in a small farming town, and oldest of seven kids. And we did, you know, when you're a kid from Ottumwa, Iowa, you do have, you know, you have dreams. You know, you watch some TV, you go to the movies, but you work in the fields. You bale hay. You detassel corn, you rogue beans, it's impossible. It's impossible to get to Hollywood. You dream about it. You know, you talk about it. You daydream about it. You know, you get the biggest thing of Hollywood that may come to your town is Andre the Giant. Yeah. Wrestling occasionally comes to town. And, you know, I did touch him when Andre the Giant came to the Ottumwa Coliseum. I mean, wrestling is huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. And I did get away from my friends. And as he was walking out of the ring, I got up on top of the ropes. I don't recommend this in any sporting event. And propelled myself and got one finger on the great Andre the Giant. And then, of course, I got the crap beat out of me. And it was so worth it. And but that's why, you know, I had dreams. I wanted to be on television because I grew up with a single father. When our dad was 22, I was 4, my sister was 3, and my brother was 1. And, and we always would tell dad he was boring because, you know, he'd go to work, he'd come home, you know, he'd play with us some. But and we didn't think he was just very exciting. But as a single 61-year-old father with a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, I've gained a ton more respect every day. I think about him, like, how in the heck did he do this or that? But you know, I definitely had a dream. There was something about, and also my father, he laughed. The times that we heard him laugh downstairs when he got out for work was there when there was a Bob Hope special on it. Bob Hope was this great comic, and he had these specials in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s until he passed away. And man, our dad would laugh hard, and we'd hear that. And we're like, what is this Bob Hope? What does he do? And I said, I got to do whatever it is he does because he makes our dad laugh so hard. So I just wanted to go to Hollywood and be on TV. And then I thought, well, A, the people in our town will like me, which isn't true. But but I wanted to make my dad laugh. And so as I got a little bit older and, you know, I had to earn money to go to college, I wanted to go to college at the University of Iowa because, you know, also when you grow up in a town where everybody looks the same, yeah. everybody does the same thing. My grandpa had worked at the meatpacking plant for almost 50 years. My dad had worked there for a little bit. Everybody in our town worked at the meatpacking plant, at the slaughterhouse. And so after high school, I worked there on the kill floor for 3 years. And that's a, you know, that's one of those jobs where it was the best job in town. It just was. It paid the most. You got benefits. But, you know, and to be honest, you know, you make your own fun there. And I still have friends who are just about ready to retire that started what I did there. Nice guys. But it's a rough job, let me tell you.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of when you're talking about that, and this goes back to Gus Frat, that, you know, my friend who played in the NFL for a long time.
I know him.
He introduced us. Yeah. And anyways, net was, you know, here's a guy that grew up in Pennsylvania, and it's kind of like those steel mines, which are, when you're talking about this, it's kind of like the same thing where your intent is just to start there, and then you get the golden handcuffs. And once you get going and it's the best job in town, like, how do you break out of that?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about a meatpacking plant. You know, your dreams are, my dreams were outside of there. As long as you keep that going. But when you start there, you start in livestock, which is outside of the actual building. Your dream then is to get inside the building, the next job up, which is on the kill floor. And that's what happened. And then your dream is a little bit more. And so into ham bone, that's the next department. And then if you're, you know, your next dream is to get into the freezer and to work at the smoke shop. But most guys don't dream to get way, take, you know, a plane and go out of there. And then about the third year, I realized my dream, I thought, I'm just going to have to stay here. I'm not going to. So I looked around. I saw guys that were happy there, which is great, but they were all married. You had families. And I thought, man, something's got to, you know, I just got to, you know, it's enticing, you know, you're like, wait a minute, what am I, that's crazy. I couldn't even get to Hollywood. Nobody's ever done that. How does that even happen? And one night we went out drinking at our disco. Afterwards, I walked outside and there's a guy named Andy Kaufman standing there. And he was on, you know, he's on Taxi. He's so funny. Yeah. And we'd had a women's wrestling event at the Tumble Coliseum. That's where we had. And he'd showed up because he was studying transcendental meditation in Fairfield, the next town over at the Maharishi International University. He came and he paid the women wrestlers to stay late so he could wrestle them. You know, he's doing all that stuff. Yeah. And then he took everybody in the audience to Happy Joe's Pizza, which it would be my dream. And I met him and I talked to him a little bit and I realized, holy cow, he got here to Ottumwa, Iowa from Hollywood. So it has to be possible to get from Ottumwa, Iowa to Hollywood. Now it's possible. And that inspired me. And then I ended up going up to saving enough money to go to the University of Iowa where they had a stage, an open mic night. And plus everybody, I saw people from all over the world there. It is just an eye opener. I loved it. And then everything became possible. I ended up moving to Minneapolis because someone offered me a $15 job and, you know, with a trash bag full of clothes. But here's the thing. As soon as I got to Hollywood, well, the first job I did was a Bob Hope special. And Bob Hope was so nice. He called my dad. And so my dad, the dream I had was that my dad would watch me with Bob Hope on that same TV in the same living room. And that happened. And it was exactly as I dreamed it.
So I'm falling down this thread. Were you a writer on the show or were you actually on
stage? I acted. I have pictures with me and Bob Hope. He played Robin Hood and I was one of his, in the sketch as one of his merry men. Roseanne and I did it. And he called up my dad. He wrote all this stuff. And then I went on to be friends with Bob Hope and I did the USO stuff. I still do the USO stuff. Yeah. Because of Bob Hope. And I spent time, I drove down to Palm Springs to visit him and his wife and we became friends. And I did probably 20 different things with him. And you know, my dad, you know, worshiped Bob Hope. Everybody did. And then I'd call him up to come down and be on the, when I was executive producing the Roseanne show and writing, I'd say, hey, what are you doing this afternoon? Did you come down and do a little thing? And, you know, he'd be golfing over there at the course of the valley there. You go, yeah, you just stop over and do that. And then we did a million other things together. And he inspired me to do the USO stuff. And, you know, I've been to Afghanistan, Iraq, all over Okinawa. I've been everywhere in the world where there are U.S. troops. And it's because of, you know, his inspiration. And but, you know, exactly as I said, and I believe this, I've been in over 100 movies, by the way. But every dream I've ever had has come true, from my children to every movie. I've had started TV shows, my sports dreams. I wanted to be on a sports show. I met all of my, most of my heroes, childhood heroes. I sat right next to them. These people would come on my sports show, and there were people that my grandpa and I would just sit and watch them, and just, I had the sports show on Fox. I could not believe I was sitting next to Willie Mays or, you know, Ernie Banks. I'm a Cub fan. I just could not believe it, because it just took me back to my grandpa and I, how many games we watched, and how many, you know, I mean, it is shocking. And it is shocking that you know, the people I know, and being from Iowa, that friends with Dan Gable, the greatest, really the greatest coach of any kind ever, but, you know, a guy that the, you know, and I'm friends with these people, and, you know, it is just, but I believe that, you know, and let me just say one thing about you, my assistant, Sasha, who is, we have the podcast, she's 30 years younger, and she was telling me, I go, give me information on the fellow today. She goes, well, he played in the NFL. I go, give me the best thing that you can offer his bio. She goes, well, yeah, he was a football player, yeah. And then he climbed a mountain. I go, how many mountains? Seven. I go, is that a big deal? She goes, well, I think he's like, I think the seven. I go, no, it's the seven. It's the seven. But it's funny, because football is the big deal, she said. Yeah. I go, what about Sports Illustrated? Yeah, she goes, well, he's a podcast. He's got a podcast. That's a big deal. And he's an NFL star. That's a big deal. And it's funny what people see, but I go, those seven, because that is the seven. But it's all a big deal. But it's so, but my children are the biggest deal. So I'll let you talk now, too.
No, I appreciate that. Well, there was a lot in there, first of all, and we're going to bounce all over just because that's the way the conversation is going. One of the things that you and I have in common is in 1981, 1983, as you mentioned before, you went to the University of Iowa. I went to the University of Washington. I was on the football team playing for Don James, legendary coach, as you know. And we ended up playing Hayden Fry's Iowa team, Hawkeye, and we beat them in the 28-0 in the 1982 Rose Bowl. And, talk about, you know, you talked about a little bit about guys like Andy Kaufman and other people coming to your town, and they really opened your eyes to what could actually be out there. And for me, when I went down to L.A., which I'd never been really before, I got to be in the Rose Bowl, be a part of all that pageantry. And by the way, we've been in the Rose Bowl the year before, played Michigan, got beat. You know, it's just literally, I think the point to anybody out there is step outside your box. And it's amazing what's out there to raise the bar of where you're trying to go. And look at you, all these great things you've done.
Yeah. Well, you know, Don James is a great, great, great coach. And that game was, that game sucked. But we got to the road. The thing about Iowa, you know, we had not been, before I was born, we got into some Rose Bowls. And we did, we had a coach named 4-7 Chesky, and we were amazing. But once I was born, we were on a dry. We still went to the games, man. My grandpa, starting when I was 5 years old, 1965, I started going to the games. My grandpa, it was wonderful because my grandpa was a big sports fan. He's a referee and umpire in Iowa, and everybody knew him. He did thousands of games, him and his partner, who's in the Hall of Fame in Iowa. And so I loved just being with him because everybody knew him, and he was a very tough guy. You know, we're Jewish. And there's not a lot of that, especially at the meatpacking plant. And, you know, I worked at a pork processing plant. And so, you know, but he was a guy that he'd mix it up with people. But I worship my grandfather. But just the whole spirit of Kinnick Stadium. But we really did it win many games. And Then Hayden Fry came to town. And this is how people, they changed. Sports is important. I just want to say this. And because until then, we weren't winning stuff. And I was working at the meatpacking plant when Hayden Fry came. And, this guy comes, and he's a character. And he's from Texas. And he's selling this stuff. And he's very Texan. And he's has these little sayings and stuff. And he's like, you just got to believe. He does, you know, he's scratch where it itches. He just, it's so different than Iowa. You know, I was pretty conservative and very, you know, Protestant, very conservative. Everybody's, but he's selling this thing. And we've been sold some before, but there's something different about him. So everybody's kind of buying in. And, man, they start winning. And I'll tell you this. At the meatpacking plant, it changed our quality of life. We were happier boning hams chiseling heads. I can tell you right now, the breaks in the break room, it lifted us up. And it's a hard job there, especially on the kill floor. We were happier. We were happier when we went out to drink it afterwards, which we were just, it just lifted us up, man. You know, sports always lifted us up in the plant. You know, when Bucky Dent hit that home run or whatever. But the vibe of the whole state because of Hayden Fry coming and stuff. And, you know, even that Super or Rose Bowl we lost. Iowa travels. We went all out there and we didn't care. We lost the game. But when Iowa went out there, I know you come to L.A. and you Washington folks. But I know it's new. But to Iowans, they came out early and they stayed. And they stayed when you lost. The last time I was we were at the Rose Bowl, I'm just going to tell you a brief story. Yeah. They said they took an alumni from Iowa and Stanford. And they said, we want. So it was Condoleezza Rice, of course, alumni from Stanford. And so she's going to say something from the field about how great Stanford is. And then Tom Arnold was going to represent the Hawkeyes. So she went first, said something beautiful. And then I was going to go. As soon as there was a break in the action and speak about being an Iowa Hawkeye. Well, they come down and Stanford scores and Christian McCafferty, I believe. And then as soon as there's a break in the action, we'll come to you, Tom, the reporters that are with me. And then Stanford scored again. And then it'll just be a moment. Then Stanford scores again. And then they run back. And then there's a fumble. And then they score again. And by the time they got to me, I think it was 35-7. I was standing there, and everybody could see, and it was the funniest thing. And I thank God I talked to the team before the game because there's no way. And I did said this thing that's pretty famous about we got it right where we want them, Hawkeyes, because we were getting crushed. And then I went up in the stands, and I did not go in the locker room, and everybody, every old Iowa player, everyone I knew, we stayed the whole. So we had so much fun, and they just. And there was once where the McCafferty kid ran right by me on the sideline, and it was. And they were focused on me standing there. The Fox lady's like, "Please don't leave. We're so sorry." I go, "No, if it had been close, it might have been awful, but they just kept." And that's the thing about being from Iowa, you probably aren't going to win the number one, and it's okay as long as you're, you know, and you, game, you just got to fight on, man.
Yeah. You well, know. Two things. You know, number one, Christian McCafferty is a great player for sure.
Yes,
phenomenal,
he is.
Phenomenal talent. And number two, I knew when all those, you know, like you said, we would go and do Disneyland together and Magic Mountain together and Knott's Berry Farm together in terms of the Iowa team and the Husky team. And, you know, so we saw these players walking around and they were just bright eyed and bushy tailed. And I just knew we were going to fry them. And we'd been there the year before and we got smoked by Michigan. So, I mean, I knew what it was that like, but the nicest people on the planet, it was so, I mean, it was just a great experience. Obviously we won, but it was a great experience too, because we were there the year before and lost. So it's just, you know, it's a once in a lifetime thing. If your school,
you guys won it because you're so much better than us on the field. I mean, it was you guys are just so much better than us. There's no other way to put it. I remember after the game, we were talking, and my grandpa and everybody tried to go, well, what was the deal? And my grandpa was like, they were just so much better than we were. That's it. There's no other way to put it. They were so much better than we were. And, you know, once in a while, You just have to say that. And I had a friend who played for the St. Louis Blues, Jeff Cortnell, and the Red Wings. They played the Red Wings in the playoffs, and I went to a bunch of games, and he was like, I was like, man, that was it's too bad you couldn't have. I go, what do you think the deal was? He goes, well, it's just that they are so much better than we are. People don't usually admit that, but sometimes it just, you know, is. Some days it's just that. It's like, if we just said, no, they are just so much better. But that day, you know, it was very clear, and it could have been worse. That's the only thing.
Hey, I got it. This is, again, going off topic a little bit, but going back to your comment about Andy Kaufman, and this is just my own curiosity, because I did watch him on Saturday Night Live and just all the skits he used to do. Was he different in person? Because he had that really quirky side that he would portray on television, and people didn't know if he was serious or not, and the whole wrestling thing that was in there.
Well, he was very sweet, you know, very sweet guy. I think that all those were, you know, he's a very sweet guy. I mean, he's very brave. I mean, obviously, Jerry Lawler was in on, he was very brave, and those were characters. And obviously, the wrestling people do it, you know. Yeah. I mean, everybody, you know, anytime you, and I know this from, you know, these wrestlers, and wrestlers know this from wrestling other wrestlers, you get involved there, you can get hurt. And the wrestling women, you get hurt. But, you know, he was, everybody was aware. It was a good thing for wrestling, and it was a good thing for, but it was a character. He wanted to play a heel. And, you know, I grew up with that type of wrestling. You know, worship all those guys, but yeah. And then the sweet, Mickey, all those characters, he just was a different kind of comic. Yeah. And, he played those different characters, and it was very brilliant. You know, he was, you know, but sometimes people get, you know, if they're used to a certain kind of comic, they get upset, but he's never broke character, which he was so brilliant.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, he treated people in my hometown. He wrestled the women because he wanted to get better at wrestling women, because he came to the right place, because the women where I'm from are tough. They're as tough as boys. Girls sports are way more supported than boys sports. The state tournament when I was growing up in basketball, softball, way more popular. And, you know, the girls, and I'll speak for my sisters, you know, they work just as right next to the five brothers, man. And they, you know, the girls I went to school with, you know, there's no, none of that. I mean, they, you know, if a father dies on a farm and the daughter is 14, 15, 16, they have to take over. It's not like, you know, it's like, well, the girl is this and the girl's that. No, it's not. And you see FFA, Future Farm of America, there's the girls are in there. And 4-H, if you go to state fair, it's the same. It was that day back then for sure. So Tubal, Iowa, when he went to wrestle the women's, that was the perfect place, I'll tell you.
You, one of my favorite shows of all time, and I couldn't figure it out when I first started watching, was The Best Damn Sports Show, period.
Yeah. Right?
And so, and the reason why I say that is just because you'd had some good success in television and especially in the movies. And now they bring you in, and I think you were in there with three or four other guys, John Sally, the basketball player, and there's another host that's gone on to Fox or something, but you were really good. And it surprised me of like your acumen of how much sports knowledge you guys had. That's one. And then you mentioned this at the very beginning, is this your ability, just because your stage you're on, of attracting all these amazing athletes that would come in and, you know, you guys would get to interview, and it was just really well done, really well done. And you were there 3 or 4 years.
We had, what a gift to go and talk about sports, which I love. Sports, I've always considered my drug of choice. It's, you know, sports are more fair than life, I always say, because there's a beginning, middle, and end. There's no fake news. You can't, I mean, you just go out and then you watch it, and then miracles happen too. I tell my son, don't, it's never over until it's over. And the miracle, you know, we watch games sometimes. And, you know, I was telling Gus, there was a Vikings game a couple years ago. We're watching it and it's over. And then I forget which quarterback makes a crazy throw at the end. And there's a million times. I'm a New York Giants fan.
Yeah.
You know, we, 2000, the game, the Super Bowl in 2008, man, the 2000, when they were playing the I don't know, the Buccaneers, Trent Dilfer, no, who they played. Trent Dilfer was quarterback in the Super Bowl. I forget which year. And we went down.
Baltimore.
I'm friends with, which one was it?
Baltimore Ravens, I believe. Trent.
Yeah. Yep. So I go, you know, I'm friends with the Tisch family, you know, who is co-owner, and old man Tisch was alive then. Bob Tisch, who I love. And, you know, Zach Tisch is my godson. That's Steve's son. And so, but Bob Tisch and I went to that, we went to a few Super Bowls together. And we had a lot of fun. And anyway, so I go down there to Tampa, and I ride to the game on the team bus with all the, everybody's like, we got this. And everybody's like, we're going to crush these guys. And we, much like Iowa did from watching, we got destroyed. And so I wouldn't even get back on the bus to ride to the hotel, to the Tisch Hotel in Orlando. I honestly pretty much hitchhiked. I was watching cars come out of the parking lot. I'm like, hey, are you guys heading towards Orlando? Because everybody was so bummed out. But then in 2008, down in Scottsdale, we're playing the Patriots, undefeated. And man, but we've been kind of close to them in our last game, though. But there's no way we're going to win. So nobody cared. So we just hanging out. Everybody's having fun. I was in the box with everybody that had a minute and a half left. And I say this is how God works, and I mean it. And all of a sudden, Eli Manning, he never gets away from anybody. And the guy said his shirt. And I'm like, there's no – and that crazy and he gets it to Dave Tyree, who can't. That's crazy. That's impossible. I start looking down there, and you know, I'm with the Americans who are, you know, some of them are big time actors now, and I'm like, what? And then, you know, Plaxico, he still has to throw the ball to Plaxico, and it just erupts. I took Mayor Bloomberg. This is the truth. If you ever have him on here, and threw him up. He's very small. Yeah. And threw him up into the ceiling. And we just blasted down to the field. And I don't think any of us had our passes. You know how hard it is to get on the field.
Yeah.
You know, Sports Illustrated get down there, but if you don't have your passes, it's tougher than the Secret Service, man. But I got, and the Americans didn't have anything. And we just blasted through and got on the field because the joy and the, when you're not sitting there, a lot of games I watch, I'm so nervous because I'm like, oh, it's my team. Like the seventh game of the World Series in 2016, I'm like, I had diarrhea because I was so worried about the Cubs screwing it up. Like, I just, but this game was the best game because I was like, we aren't going to win. Let's have fun. It's impossible. And then, but you know, that's the gift of sports. You have a team, you root for these teams. You have that in common with people that don't think like you think politically, especially in this awful, you know, and you walk through an airport, you know, people go, hey, go Hawks to me. And I go, yeah, I have something in common with you. Or they'll go Michigan. And I'll go, I have something not in common with you. I want to, you know, but it's that fun sports, that sports thing. Because if you love sports, if you really love sports and you have a team, you know that you are going to lose sometimes. And you can shake hands and you got something, you get riled up about something with somebody and go, okay, well, we're going to do it again next year, aren't we? Or we're going to do it later this year, and then I'm going to get you. You don't go, well, I want you dead, or I want you to, you know. And you can take losing. You know how to take losing. And so it's a, you know, Jimmy Carter, when he was in the White House, he was a Braves or a Red Sox fan. I forget what he told me. He came on my sports show. And it did affect his quality of life if his team lost for a minute or so, because it does hurt. It does hurt for a second. If you don't care for a moment, then you really aren't a sports fan. If it doesn't put a little twinge in you, then but if you don't care about sports at all, then you shouldn't be the president of the United States. That's what I say. That's me.
So is there one of all the interviews that you did over time, is there one interview that still stays with you in terms of that was just amazing? You probably weren't even talking about sports, or maybe it was. It was just a very emotional moment with anybody. I mean, you guys had a lot of people on.
Well, you know, John Kruk was our baseball guy. I loved him. Michael Irvin was our football guy. Loved him. Chris Rose was the host. He said all those guys have done so well. You know, we did a lot of different kinds of things. You know, my sister had been in prison for, you know, she was a drug dealer, and you know, she's my little sister, and it was her second stint, and the first time she got arrested, you know, I helped her, and she got went to a good prison in West Virginia, the place that Martha Stewart had gone, and you know, I was able to call her there, and it's a camp, a prison camp, you know, and yeah, pretty swanky for, you know, and go down there and speak to the women about my recovery. You know, I'm also a recovering addict, and there was, you know, nothing like speaking at a women's prison. You know, that's, you talk about getting, you know, making me feel good, because they, and then I had her set up with a job at the meat packing plant, the best job in Ottumwa, by the way. Wow. That's a good job. And, you know, I'd work with, I become friends with the DEA, the agents that originally had arrested her and her, she's the queen of meth, and they're, you know, they make a movie about her. And so I said, this, you got the job there, you don't do this, that. And, you know, I'd help raise her son, who was seven when his parents went to prison, and his dad ended up dying in Leavenworth. But it's also, and then the guy from the DEA calls and said, hey, she's dealing again. If she stops really right away, we'll let her off. So I flew to Ottumwa, where from. I got my other six brothers and sisters, five, six counting her. We all met at the photo studio, Doree's Photo, and take a picture for our dad. And then as we walked out of there, I said, Lori, you know, I talked to the sheriff and the DA and everybody. They know you're dealing. And if you stop right now, you won't be arrested. And she said, she told me to mind my effing business. And then the next week, they raided her things just like they did last time. And she went to prison. And I said, this prison, this has got to be a real prison with a component of rehabilitation, a drug rehabilitation component, but it's got to be real. And so she got 10 more years. And I did not visit her for the first maybe 3 years. And my show, we filmed me going to visit her for the first time. And, you know, it was, you know, my show was trying to keep things a little light. And it was as light as possible. My sister always had a way of making things funny or whatever. But, you know, it was a real women's prison. And I'm grateful that got to do that. And because, you know, I was also, but from then on, we communicated a lot. So it was probably good that happened. And then since she's got out, you know, she's been knock on wood. She's been doing, you know, she's still a biker. But she's been doing, we've communicated a lot. The Discovery Channel's filming a documentary series about her, but really legitimate documentaries about her and our hometown. I'm going back next week and do a couple of days, and just about what happened to the economy and how this could have happened. And, you know, I feel comfortable doing that, and how that we grew up and what our mother was like, who had disappeared and whatever, and then came back and took my sister. And my sister got married when she was 14 to this biker and says, whatever. And I'm blessed that our life at the same time that I kind of went to Hollywood, she went this way and started buying drugs from the Mexican mafia, and then became the biggest methamphetamine dealer in America. And so I went to Hollywood, and we're just, you know, but for the grace of God, go I, because I was I used drugs, and I could never sell them because I used them. So, you know, it's about, you know, anyway, my sports show, we went there and.
No, that's incredible. What I was going to say, I think a lot of times when these things work, and I think one of the things I really respect about you is when you sprinkle in this thing called vulnerability, right? Where you're ready to expose yourself. You've discussed your things in the past. The name of the show is called Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their flipping way. And I've gone through my stuff, and we've all gone through. And I think the gift is when you can step up to the plate and say, look, this is me. This is who I am. This is what happened. and I'm better for it today, but I had to go through it. I didn't go around it. I had to go through it. And, you know, you just, you know, we all learn. There's no perfect course, and that's what makes you who you are, which I think is pretty cool. Let me ask you this.
I have so much respect for what you've done. I just can't. You've done five lifetimes at least of. I just can't. I can't get my head around the things that you have done, and you're still doing it. I just can't imagine. But
well, but you know, the thing, Tom, you know, that I you know, when I was going through some of my own personal battles, you know, 10 years ago. And I'm originally from Seattle, Washington, home of the Huskies, as you know. And so growing up there in the Northwest and all the mountains, I said, you know, I'm going to start climbing the seven summits and try to become the first NFL player to ever do so. And that's, you know, that has like nature has my part of my healing has been going out. I live in Sun Valley, Idaho now, and I walk out and I hug a tree every day, you know, and see butterflies going through. And so my whole focus on things that I used to maybe not be focused on, it's just brought a whole calming effect around everything that I'm trying to do. And I'm not quite there. I still have one more mountain to go, but the best thing you can do, and this is something you've done such a terrific job at, is just keep stepping up to the plate and swinging the bat. And you just don't know where that's going to go versus playing it safe all the time. One of the movies, I just wanted to bring this up really quick because it was one of my favorite movies that you've done. Just a great movie in general, but you happen to be in it. Is True Lies. And your good buddy, I'm sure Arnold Schwarzenegger has a big place here, just a couple miles.
Yeah, he FaceTimed me from there the other day. I knew you lived up there. And how close is he to you? He's close to you, right?
Oh, we're a mile. Yeah. I know. Yeah.
He FaceTimed. Arnold's True Lies is a good movie because of me, mostly. But True Lies is let me explain this. Of the 120 movies I've done, True Lies was really the first. And it's so, I'm so lucky because I filmed it during my last year of my marriage to Roseanne. I was doing the show, come back and forth. And we, when we got divorced, it was a big deal. And it was not so, you know, people, because she's a big star on the show. And I lost my job on the show, weirdly enough, the same day she filed for divorce. And, they weren't like going, well, we like both of these guys. We'll work with both of them. They were like, she was like, if you ever work with him again, you'll never see me again. So I didn't think my prospects for jobs were too good. But Jim Cameron, the director, and Arnold were like, forget those people. When True Lies comes out in 2 months, everybody's going to be blown away. And I was like, I wish I could believe it, but it really did. It changed my life. And just the opportunity to work on this film, I had no idea how big of a deal it was, or I probably would have been freaked out every day. But it's a movie that I got to play basically myself and my relationship with Arnold in real life. And, you know, it was the highest priced movie ever at the time. And I didn't even think about that. And James Cameron, he trusted me. You know, I went to my agent thought we were going to leave the agency. So he said, oh, I got you an audition for this James Cameron movie, True Lies. And I knew it was, he called it a favor. And I was too embarrassed. I said, no, I'm too embarrassed. He doesn't want me. You asked him to do you a favor. And I almost didn't even go. But then I thought, well, you know, I won't ever get to meet James Cameron. This will be my chance. So I went over to his house and then we chit-chatted. He was very nice. And I'm such a fan for the Terminator movies, everything. And so he goes, well, are you going to do the scene? I go, I didn't even read it. I go, I just wanted to meet you. I know you don't want me to. He goes, well, just read it off this paper. And I I read it once. He goes, hey, get Arnold down here. That's what happened. Arnold Schwarzenegger came down the steps and I was like, oh, shoot, there he is. I go, look at him. And I said to James Cameron, I go, I think I could take him. And I was serious. Like, you size guys up. And then we did a scene together. And James goes, give me my camera. And he films us doing it one more time. And he goes, took his camera down. He goes, listen, you got the part. And I go, oh, my God. But don't tell anybody for 2 weeks. And I was like, oh, I swear to God, I won't. Oh, no, I won't tell a soul the best news of my life for 2 weeks. You can count on me. And I go, I got to go to my car. So I went to my car. I tell everybody. Nobody believes it. And because, you know, he had to give Fox Films the bad news, but and he had to talk him. He had to just say, "It's they didn't want me in the movie." He goes, "Well, then I'll make it a Paramount." It went like that. But he told me the reason he cast me is because when I saw Arnold, I said, "I think I can take him." He said that was why he cast me, because that's the character he wanted. Then it was like I was like looking at him like, seriously, size him up. Like, yeah, I think I can take him. Like James Cameron, by the way, is a 6'3" raw boned Canadian. Like he's that guy. But I love Arnold so much. You know, he's been a really great friend. And you know, he was first person in the delivery room of my son, my 7-year-old son was born. You know, my kids, when we FaceTimed the other day, they love it. My son has posters of Arnold Schwarzenegger in his bedroom. And not just the bodybuilding stuff. And you know, he let kids love True Lies. And they don't watch, they watch some of my movies. But that movie, we stayed friends. Jamie Lee Curtis is still a friend.
I think I've seen her around here a little bit. I think she might have a place up here.
Yeah, and we write each other dirty nuts. We were doing a Zumba charity event the other night, and you know how you can write each other personal things. I love her. James Cameron, you know, what a gift to be able to – can you imagine me that time? That's nothing. I am friends with – you know, when we started that movie, before we started, Jim Cameron's like, hey, would you like Arnold to come over to your house and work out with you? And I would go, yeah. Yeah, I really would like the greatest bodybuilder of all time to come to my personal gym. And so we worked out. And then the next day, Cameron's like, what time would you like Arnold to come over tomorrow and work out with you? And I go, yeah, I don't want him to. And he goes, why? I go, because number one, I could say I trained with the greatest bodybuilder that ever lived. So I got that. Number two, it's too much pressure because he really looks at my body. And you know, the first thing Arnold does, he sizes you up, and then he has to give you one compliment. He's like, you know, Tom, you have a fantastic right calf, you know. And then I go, and then he starts in one of my trouble spots because he genuinely tries to help me. And it is, I got a lot of trouble spots. So the whole movie, he had a semi-truck trailer with a gym in it, like a super. And then I would go to Ben and Jerry's ice cream. But then by the middle of the movie, he started eating ice cream with me and quit working out. And that's a friendship because I had drug him down a little bit. But you know, he's a killer, man. He gets up at 4:30 every day and works out. And we do a lot of charity stuff together. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger lives his life like he's running for office all the time. That's the best way I can describe him. You know, and I've had so much fun when he was governor going up and being semi-involved in that and sometimes too involved. And his people having to explain things. And, you know, he gets a little mischief himself, by the way. But I love him, man.
Well, you tell him anytime he wants to get a phenomenal workout. I run up and down the mountains every day with Jim Mora.
Do you really?
Oh yeah.
I like Jim Mora a lot.
Jim's here in town, so we will punish him. Tell him that. Tell the Terminator we will punish. Let me ask you one last question. What is the best thing and the worst thing about having your kind of celebrity in Hollywood?
Well, you know, I'd hate to complain about anything that I dreamt about as a kid. No, about casting. Oh no, that's Tom Arnold doesn't do. Oh no, to go. That people think they know what you do. Well, he does this kind of a role because they've seen you in a bunch of movies where he did that. Or when you read that they're casting a Tom Arnold type, but younger. I remember when after True Lies, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, I think it was that. Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, that movie. And then Vince Vaughn was me. And they were Arnold and Jamie Lee Curtis. And I'm like, dude, that he is playing me and they are playing those guys. But then they'll say in the casting, you know, like a Tom Arnold or the director will say, you know, I want you to be like, and after True Lies, a lot of people tried to do movies like that. And, you know, I get a lot of, people are, you know, they, on the internet, people, there's a lot of trolls, you know, people go, well, he's never done anything. He's just done Roseanne. But then they'll, you know, they'll go, well, except for this movie or that movie or Austin Powers or this or that or this. And, but you know, it's, I wouldn't trade. I'd rather be, I am sure that I am very well known. I'm sure that I'm very famous for a, whether it be Soul Plate or to different audiences. People are definitely, you know, it's a blessing. I'm blessed. By the way, Jim Mora, we had a clip of him that we played almost every day on the sports show. I'm just picturing it, but he'll know what it is because we played it every day. And it was up there with Allen Iverson's Practice. But something about, oh my God, I got to remember that. We played it every day.
You're talking about playoffs?
Yeah, playoffs. Yes. It is the funniest. You're talking about playoffs. Yeah, it's the funniest.
So that's Jim Moore Sr. He was my coach, and I am buddies. Yeah. The guy who I'm running up and down the mountains with is Jim Moore Jr.
Oh, you're with Jim Moore Jr. Oh, he's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I love both. That's a great family. That's a great. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're both amazing. I was going to say, if Jim Moore Sr. shut up the hill.
No, he's not saying right. He's playing golf. No. Jim Moore Sr. is playing golf in Palm Desert.
How old is Jim Moore Jr.?
We're the same age, 58. Oh.
Yeah, well, you're a little bit younger than me. Barely.
Yeah. Oh, you got me just by hair.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Hey, listen, thank dude, I so appreciate you coming on.
I am going to tell Arnold that. I'll hook you guys up.
Oh, that'd be great. Love to have him on the pod. And, like, you know, we work out every day, twice a day. We got Everest coming up, and it's, you know, it's two a days going hardcore. So you would appreciate it.
All right. Don't kill him.
All right, man. Listen, thank you so much. He is the one and only Tom Arnold. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.